Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal Series, five wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer Breast Health Exclamation Point, The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and Susan's latest book, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses at the Wise Woman University. But you can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Justine. What a perfect end of August day it was today. Wonderful time out with the goats and just enjoying these last few days here at home, because I am taking off for the other coast in a couple of days.
Yes, you are, and you're going to be presenting at a goddess festival.
Yes, Zsuzsanna Budapest Goddess Festival, and then I'll be doing something in Los Angeles with the Flame Priestesses, and that should be a lot of fun, too. However, let's get the apologies right in here at the beginning. That means I will not be here next Tuesday to do this regular blog talk show. It's Labor Day weekend, and we hope you have a blessed and wonderful holiday, and I'll be right back with you September 9th, same time.
That's right. So Monica Jean and I went out and harvested bone set today. That was really lovely, and made up a nice tincture.
Ah, beautiful. Yes. Bone set, so called because the flu used to be called break bone fever. And bone set relieves muscle ache.
Well, you couldn't believe how many bees and butterflies and insects were crawling all over those flowers, and they smelled so good.
She and her sister, she's Eupatorium perfoliatum, not exactly a low-growing plant, but hardly ever above 3 or 4 feet. And then Eupatorium purpureum, which is queen of the meadow, or Joe Pieweed, which can get 6, 7, 8 feet tall, and usually growing in the same areas.
Yes, there were a few of the Joe Pieweed, not nearly as many as the Bone Set, but they were pretty far out in the field, and we had to trek through some pretty tall grasses to get out there. But it was worth the hike.
Yeah, and then a little wet when you got to where those two were growing.
Well, not right now. I mean, it hasn't rained in a couple of weeks, and the grass is pretty dry at this point.
Pretty dry, so. Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah.
They do like wettish spots off the sides of roads.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe if it had rained recently, but right now we could use some rain, couldn't we?
We certainly could.
Yeah.
Well, last week we didn't a single emailed in question because the phone lines were so wonderfully busy, and I was about to ask if there's anybody on the line tonight.
There are, but first I wanted to mention that we have a guest this evening at 9 o'clock. Karen Kane, and she's the author of a book called A Unique Life, Fully Lived, A Personal Journey of Love, Hope, and Courage. And looking forward to hearing what she has to say. She's a parent advocate for children of disability and travels around the country inspiring families. So that sounds like it's going to be a pretty good interview tonight.
I think so, yeah. Wow.
You always have such great guests on. It's such a perfect ending to a wonderful first hour and a half of Q&A. So we have a few people on here. I'm going to open up the line for the 714 area code. You can go ahead and speak with Susan.
Hi, Justin and Susan. It's Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
Well, it's neat to know you're going to be in my neighborhood. I live in Orange County, Southern California.
Mm-hmm. So were you affected by the earthquake?
No, that's in Northern California, so that's upper, the Napa wine. I'm down here about 20 minutes north of Disneyland in Southern California.
I wasn't sure how, since I don't watch TV, I wasn't sure how far because that fault does extend all the way down there, yeah?
Oh, no, we had a pretty good one back in March, March 28th, I remember it specifically, it's the day my husband retired. The day he retires, we get a pretty good shaker. They had a lot of damage. I know. They got a lot of damage up there. Maybe they're not prepared. I don't really understand. I didn't follow it either. I didn't even find out till the next day. So.
Yeah.
gonna be warm down here, Susan. You probably already know that. Gonna be warm.
Let's see now. The weather lady, at my friend's house. On the radio was saying, well, it's going to be cooler tomorrow in the 80s. So if you say warm, you must mean in the hundreds.
All I know is that a neighbor of mine told me that it's going to warm up quite a bit over Labor Day, and it's in the 80s today. And so I'm thinking when they say that, I think into the 90s. So I don't know.
Well, that's about what it was here today.
Yeah, so it probably won't be that much. It'll be less humid. I mean, we've been having a lot of humidity, but I know it'll be much less humid than what you're used to there in New York. So.
Too bad. The only thing that makes heat tolerable is humidity.
Me too, Susan. I dislike dry. I get it's
that desert stuff is hard.
Out.
Yeah, very hard.
To me, it is. Some people love it. I prefer humidity myself.
Yep. Anyhow, did you call?
So to get to my questions, yes. Very quickly, we were discussing last week dandelion root, and that's all I had, dried dandelion root, to make this tincture that I'm using now. But I like it so much. I really just like it for my digestive system. So I have an opportunity to buy at my farmer's market tomorrow fresh dandelion. It's not with any flowers, though. It's just the stock, I guess it would be called. Would that make a good tincture, better than the dried root, I wonder?
Well, I'm completely unclear from what you're saying, what it is that you're going to buy. And so let me see if I can tell you what might be for sale.
Okay.
What is often for sale at farmer's market is the leaves of either dandelion or chicory, and they're both sold as dandelion.
Oh.
it's rare that you would find the whole plant, root, and leaves sold at a farmer's market. So we're probably just talking about the leaves. I was just listening to a talk by Isla Burgess, a wonderful friend of mine, a fabulous herbalist, and she was talking about that at this point she only uses tincture made from the root and the leaves because she just thinks they work so beautifully together. And in fact, she's not even using a tincture anymore. She's using a vinegar, and she loves the vinegar of the fresh root and leaves. I'm on her page. I love the vinegar of the fresh root, but I also make tincture of the fresh root. And as far as I am concerned, Kathy, any fresh plant material is better than any dried plant material.
That's what I thought you would say. Yeah, I had dried root because that's all I had available to me back a few months ago. But I think these are the leaves. They come, they're long, are the leaves kind of long, about 8 inches long usually?
They can be that long or they can be longer or shorter, yes.
Okay. And does it matter, should I inquire if this is dandelion or chicory leaves?
They're used pretty much the same, so it doesn't really make a lot of difference.
Good deal. So I'm going to buy some and chop it up fresh and make a tincture from it. Now, obviously, I don't have access to the fresh root, so I don't need to add dried root to that. Or what do you think?
Well, when you say I don't have access, I wonder what you mean. And what I think you mean is I'm not willing to stir myself to get any dandelion root. Obviously, if these people at the farmer's market are selling the leaves, those leaves are coming from roots.
I know, I you're right.
Obviously, if you ask them if they would dig some root for you, they probably would. Money talks.
Sure. Well, I did ask last time, and she doesn't grow it herself. So maybe I'll ask her to give me the card or the access to the
people.
The
person who is growing it.
Yes. And
that's what I mean, stir
and
yourself. That's what I mean, make some effort.
I sure will. I'd be happy to do
that. Obviously, dandelion root is available to you, but obviously it's going to take a little effort on your part.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this, Susan, when it comes up
even
in my yard...
Even if it was growing in your lawn, it would still require effort to dig it out.
Yeah. Next year, I will not dig mine out and throw it away. I was before I knew you. We did. We had a lot of dandelion in my lawn. We did. So next year, I'll know what to do.
Good.
So,
if there's any left next year. So also, let's think about this.
Yeah.
Would we want to use a root when the plant is flowering?
I would say no. The flower
You're right.
is better.
Because we wouldn't want to use the root when the plant is flowering because the energy is in the flower. And usually we dig roots when the energy goes back to the root.
Mm-hmm. And this is good, yeah.
Yeah, so usually in your area, the coming up season is more springy than any other season. Things start to cool off, green starts coming again, things start growing. And so before that happens, before those rains come, and before that happens, is the ideal time to dig the dandelion root.
Oh, that's good.
Right.
Yeah. And so your friend said the vinegar is quite...
She really likes vinegar best, better than the tincture at this point.
Wow. Well, good. I'm going to try that. Maybe I'll do that and just enjoy my dried root one that I have here, because I'm doing what you recommend in some of your articles. I'm using vinegar and molasses in the morning, so I could do that.
There
with
you
the
go.
Dandelion vinegar and putting on my food, and I'll be good to go.
Yeah.
So,
nice.
Thank you.
You're so welcome, Kathy.
Okay,
green blessings.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh. I'm not hearing anything. Are we still connected?
Hey there. In the 917 area, the line is open for you to speak with Susan.
Hi, Susan. This is Pat. I'm calling you because I came back from the Dominican Republic on August 6th and seem to have caught chikungunya, which is a mosquito-borne virus, and it's leaving my joints incredibly achy and sore, and it's kind of much harder to get around. So I was wondering what you might recommend for that.
One of the herbs that I like as an antiviral is Hypericum perforatum, often called St. John's wort, and I call it St. Joan's wort. It's easily available as a tincture, and the tincture does need to be made exclusively from the fresh plant, never from the dried plant. And that tincture of the fresh flowering tops of Hypericum perforatum is a pretty powerful antiviral and might even be able to get rid of this virus. Plus, as an added benefit, it eases muscle and joint pain.
Oh, great.
I do not hesitate to use fairly large doses of it. My starting dose would be a dropperful. And how often you take that would depend on how much pain you're in. So at the beginning, it would not be unreasonable to take a dropperful every hour or even more frequently if you felt that you needed it. However, as you started to get relief from it, then you wouldn't need to take it that often. In terms of working with it as an antiviral, we usually think that a dropperful or two dropperfuls at a time, taken four times a day, is usually enough.
Okay.
But you could take more if it's relieving the pain and you find that more is more helpful in relieving the pain.
Excellent. Oh, this is good news. I heard you talking before about bone set. Is that something I should consider too?
Do you have access to it?
Not unless I order it from somewhere. I'm in the city.
Mm-hmm. Well, my take on herbs is to use one at a time.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so I would say work with the Hypericum. And if for some reason, after a couple of weeks, you don't think anything is happening, then certainly try something else.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Green blessings.
Thank you. You as well.
Okie dokie. Well, there's a lot of people on here listening, but it doesn't seem like there's anybody who's pressed the one button that wants to ask a question right now. So maybe we should try to get a couple of these email questions answered.
Yes.
Okay. Aloha, Susan. I've been highly recommended to contact you from a former intern of yours. I would like to ask a question regarding thyroid and mercury toxicity. About 13 years ago, when I was 20, I had 6 amalgam mercury fillings removed. At that time, I didn't know how important it was to do this procedure very carefully. And the procedure was done without a dental dam or anything. Looking back now, it's crazy to think how much mercury must have seeped into me. About a year later, I had severe overactive thyroid symptoms and was diagnosed with Graves' disease. I was told it was urgent that I irradiate myself or else I could potentially die. I was scared, and so I did as I was urged to do, even though a part of me knew better, and of course, none of the doctors ever asked about a possible dental contamination or anything. I pieced together how a healthy 20-year-old would get so sick later. Now I'm cured by Western medicine standards. I have an underactive thyroid and now take thyroid supplement therapy, probably for the rest of my life. I'm on Armour Thyroid. However, I'm interested in taking the raw thyroid glandular from New Zealand, but gave not found a doctor that was familiar using it. The crazy thing is I am now double toxic, radiation and mercury. So my question to you is, What would you recommend? I want to detox the toxins and nurture my thyroid and heal my glands. I'm an organic farmer in Hawaii, and I lead a healthful lifestyle. Mahalo nui. Thank you so much, wise woman Susan.
I hear you. You characterize your lifestyle as healthy. I must say that it hurts my heart that you call yourself toxic and double toxic. And in my belief system, anyone who considers themselves toxic is not leading a healthy lifestyle, because a healthy lifestyle starts with how we view ourselves. And viewing yourself in this way is enough to make you sick. It's the reason, so far as I can see, that you got sick in the first place, by viewing something as toxic, by viewing the amalgam fillings in your mouth as toxic and having them removed. I hope everyone listening listens very, very closely to what has happened to this woman. It is dangerous and unhealthy to have your fillings removed. And not only that, my dear, what were they replaced with? They were replaced with plastic. And the plastics that are used lead to diabetes. You are far better off keeping those amalgam fillings in your mouth. As a matter of fact, I ask for amalgam fillings on the rare occasion when I need to get a filling, because I do not want plastic put into my mouth. Thank you very much. So, you know, I view the body as being capable, strong, and able to exist in an environment awash with a variety of things that are threatening to us. To start off, we live on a planet bathed in radiation from that big nuclear reactor in the sky that we call the sun. So we are quite used to radiation. The amount of radiation that you have gotten, I'm assuming that you're talking about from Fukushima, is negligible. You are not toxic or toxified in any way by that. The people in that immediate area have been impacted and affected, but you have not. And I have this on the advice and the careful questioning of several people who are experts on radiation, as well as a great bit of digging and reading that I did about the area and the radiation. Because, of course, people have been asking ever since Fukushima melted down, what about the radiation? And so I can say to you with a great deal of assurance that there is nothing that that radioactivity that was released there has done to you at all. In fact, one comparison that was given to me really sticks in my mind. The amount of radioactivity released by Fukushima is less than the amount of radioactivity released during the above-ground nuclear bomb tests in the 50s in the United States. And that amount of radioactivity is less than the natural background radioactive level of the Earth itself, not even counting the radioactivity that we get from the sun. So I would like you to set aside your belief that you are radioactively toxic. Secondly, the body is very good at eliminating things that are not good for it. Heavy metals can sometimes stay around. What's, I think, confusing to most people is that we think about things like mercury or calcium, and we think that they're one thing, but they're not. Because mercury or calcium is basically an inert substance, and it has to be acted on and ionized and turned to in salt form in order to be utilized by living tissues. And the ways to turn these elements into salt forms are numerous, so that we don't just have one kind of calcium, but hundreds of kinds of calcium. Not just one form of mercury, but lots of different forms of mercury. And our bodies deal with different forms of mercury very, very differently. You're quite right that the worst possible exposure to mercury is having a filling drilled out. And that's because that mercury is vaporized and you breathe it in. Even if you had a dental dam, you would have been breathing it in. And this is why never, ever, ever have an amalgam filling removed unless it is a critical necessity. Leave them be. They are not putting any mercury into your body so long as they are right there in your tooth. It's only if you start to disturb it that it's a problem. Seaweed is the best thing for removing both heavy metals and radioactivity from the body. Seaweed, of course, is also wonderful for the thyroid. So you might want to start eating a lot of seaweed. Even people who say that they eat a lot of seaweed usually aren't really eating that much seaweed, especially when you compare it to like the amount of carrots or apples that they might eat. So investigate some different seaweeds. See if you can have seaweed at least once a day. And with that seaweed, I would like you to ingest this thought, this belief. I am hale and hearty and healthy. My body is perfect and does exactly what it needs to do. Then I could truly say you are following a healthy lifestyle. Green blessings.
All right, we have
okay,
some
now I know there was also some thyroid things there, but I didn't think that she was actually asking me about that. But I did want to say that there's no, that I know of, thyroid extract that it will do what the Armor Thyroid is doing for her.
Okay, thanks for covering that.
Yeah.
Person in the 860 area code, you're open to speak with Susan.
Good evening. This is Jasdeep from Connecticut. Hello, ladies.
Hi, Jasdeep. I miss you.
I miss you, too, and looking forward to our September meeting.
Yes.
I have a very brief question because this show is worldwide popular and everyone needs their time. Before I waste a quart of 100-proof vodka, I just wanted to inquire about the elderberry. I watched your YouTubes. I scanned the e-zines and the mentor program, trying to figure out if these blue or elderberries are in fact that. They have a white inside and a big pit, and they're bitter.
No.
No, okay.
Elderberries are tiny and black.
Only black.
Dark, dark purple.
Okay. Okay, I'm glad I didn't make a poisonous batch of whatever these things are. And
they're
that's all I have.
Dogwood berries.
Dogwood berries.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much. See you soon. Green
See
blessings.
You soon, Jasdeep. Green blessings.
Okay, we're going to go back to another question. This one's...
Yes, Jasdeep is part of the Live Out Apprentice group this year.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful group.
Hello, Susan. I have a big tumor on my liver, and the cancer is invading my abdomen. I have lots of pain. I need help. I don't know what to do. I have searched low and high for a cure. I just started a treatment with my oncologists by using antibody to destroy cancer, and I pray it will work to buy me some time. I can hardly walk. I'm very weak. Maybe you can point me in some direction. I would appreciate it. Thank you.
We live in a time where we are getting older. And many, many more people are getting older. And this increases the incidence of cancer all around us, so that we begin to understand more and more and more that cancer is not one thing, but a great many different things. A large tumor that is metastasizing is often a candidate for surgery. I'm surprised that you haven't mentioned that. People often expect me to be against surgery or against chemotherapy or against radiation, and I'm not against any of those things. I'm against misusing them. I'm against using them when other things will help. But I am particularly for surgery when it comes to cancer. And this is because of the great number of people that I have talked to, who have said to me things like, I had no idea how much stress the cancer was causing on my immune system until I had it surgically removed. And it was then and only then that I felt like I had the energy and that my immune system had the strength to actually do something against this cancer. So if it has come up at all that this tumor would be a candidate for surgical removal, I would urge you to seriously consider having that surgery. Surgery, of course, is not easy. It can be painful. It can be difficult. Yet, on the other hand, the benefits of having a cancer removed surgically are enormous. Edgar Cayce, the psychic healer, used a lot of castor oil, and especially in situations like this. There are instructions for preparing castor oil packs in my book, Breast Cancer? Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way. And those castor packs, which are heated up in the oven, can be applied directly over the tumor that would be to your belly. And they are said to dissolve away the tumor. Near the same section, in the area where I'm talking about surgery, there are also lists of ointments and herbs that are used to actually perforate the skin and cause the cancer to be expelled. And these lists are under the heading, Instead of Surgery. I would warn you against doing anything like this in this situation, because we're talking about the belly, and we're talking about possible perforation of the intestine here with these escharotic or very powerful salves. I hope that you are not taking any supplements of any kind. The accumulating information on supplements, especially antioxidant supplements, is very, very bad when it comes to cancer. And so it's one of the first things that I ask people who are dealing with cancer to do is to throw out all of their pills, except pills that the doctor prescribes, and then I sit down often with them and throw out two-thirds of the pills that the doctor has prescribed too. I know that in a way this is very general information, but I think that perhaps some general information could be extremely useful for you as well. And one last thought. If you don't already have a meditation practice, please do start a meditation practice. I'm reminded of my student who runs a Zen monastery. She's not the sensei. She runs the physical operation of this Zen monastery in Japan. And she said that one of the monks said to her, oh, I don't feel so well. Can I miss meditation tomorrow morning? And she looked at him and she said, meditation is practice for dying. You're not necessarily going to feel well when you die, so come to meditation anyhow and practice. Green blessings.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to move on to another email question here. Funny, we had so many people last week, and there's nobody
calling
in
this
week. That's okay. We'll just
get
caught up on these questions.
Yeah. Right.
And let me see. Okay. I have persistent acne. I'm 20 years old. I eat a good diet. Maybe I don't drink enough water. And I don't know what to do. It really bothers me and makes me feel uncomfortable to go out. I have been considering becoming a vegetarian. My friends tell me that it's because I eat meat. I do like to eat sweets too, but I don't know what to do. Please help. Thank you, Susan.
You are welcome. I don't think that becoming a vegetarian will improve your skin at all. As a matter of fact, I think it's a retrograde or a backwards kind of motion. I often wonder exactly what people mean when they say I eat a good diet, because that can cover a huge variety of different things, and our definitions of good diet can be quite different. So let's start here. In the past couple of weeks, you may have heard someone call in and say, I really want to thank you, Susan, for suggesting spraying yarrow tincture on the face before going to sleep. That has made a world of difference. If I recall correctly, this caller was talking about a son or a daughter, a teenage son or daughter, who, like you, was somewhat at their wit's end about what to do. And so the yarrow tincture that we're talking about is just any yarrow tincture that you can buy, very powerful antiseptic, and it's sprayed on the skin last thing before going to bed and just allowed to stay on overnight. You can also spray it on your skin in the morning. I prefer to make my own yarrow tincture with 100 proof vodka, because 100 proof vodka is so nice on the skin. And ethyl alcohol, which is used by many tincture manufacturers, is not so kind to the skin, but whatever you can get, because I know that you want to start working with it right now. Craving for sweets indicates to me a diet that's lacking in minerals. When there's lots of minerals in the diet, then although we enjoy sweets, we don't crave sweets. And that is a real difference. I often talk about what happens at the Green Goddess Apprentice Week. And the green goddesses are having at least a half cup serving of cooked greens on a daily basis. They are drinking nourishing herbal infusion as their sole liquid. You're probably drinking far too much water, as contrary to your belief that you're not drinking enough. As a matter of fact, I hardly drink any water at all, but I do drink a quart of nourishing herbal infusion a day. So they're getting minerals from these cooked greens. They're getting minerals from the nourishing herbal infusions. And then Saturday, we have our goddess pageant, and we bring out good organic chocolate bars. And year after year, I see the women enjoy the chocolate. I say to them, are you being polite? You can eat more, eat as much as you want. And yet year after year, the chocolate is never finished because the women are replete with minerals. They have a square or two or even three of chocolate, and then they say they are fully satiated. So yarrow tincture sprayed on your face morning and night, allowed to dry and left on there, and a quart of nourishing herbal infusion every day. And give me a call in a month and let me know how you, your skin, and your acne are. Green blessings.
Thank you. The person in the 205 area, the line is open for you to ask Susan a question.
Hello, Susan. It's Parker.
Hi, Parker. I love
Hello.
You. How are you?
I love you, too. I am doing so well. And again, I just want to thank you for the blessings of just deep knowing and seeing. It has been so much more lasting than I ever could have imagined.
Oh, Parker, thank you. Can I tell everyone that you did a live-in apprenticeship?
Yes, please.
Yes. Yeah, I was just... I don't know if you saw the easing this week, but I was talking about the 300 apprentices that I have graduated and what a difficult program it is and what honor is due to you for being an actual graduate of that program, Parker. Congratulations.
Oh, my gosh. And, I just wanted to speak out because I feel if every woman or, just spirit, soul goes and, just humbles himself enough to listen to you and to acknowledge the blessing that you bring to this earth, I feel every human could change, honestly. Like, it's just, Yeah, and I really wanted to share that with everyone because I'm just like, oh, this woman, like, you know, she's invisible, yet she is so pronounced in my life. And it just, you care, you're like that little flame. I have it. And I'm just like, oh, stay with me still. So
thank you so much, Parker. Mm-hmm. And keep passing it on. That's what it's about, isn't
yeah.
it? And that's what
yes.
the wise woman tradition is about. It's about passing it on and saying, hey, I've got some, I'm going to share it with you. And you so exemplify that.
Oh, thank you. Well, I do have a couple of questions.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, so yesterday I was, or the other day, I was frolicking through a yard. And, you know, I was running and so joyously, vibrantly running. And I was going to my friend's front door. And I step on a roofing tack with my bare feet. It penetrates in my skin. And lo and behold, it was rusty and perhaps maybe dirty. And in a way that dirt was on it, not in a bad way. Dirt is great.
Right.
I love it.
Right.
Yes. And my mother was very worried, and she said to me, you know, oh, you need to go and get a tetanus shot as soon as you can. And I, you know, I took a look back because I was like, you know, I wonder what would be the best method. So I just decided to go home and wash it with some Queen of Hungary's water that I made with rosemary flowers and nutmeg and some cinnamon. And I washed it, you know, and it felt really good and it just was very nourishing. And I had I asked my dreams, like, what to do. And it just showed me, you know, very interesting things. Like, it was like I was in a horror house and I really didn't, you know where to go with that because I was like, okay, that dream, you know, it showed me something, yet where to go? What is it about tetanus that makes people lose their heads? Or like, what should I do? What do I need to do here?
Okay. So that was what I was about to say was, yes, but what did you learn about tetanus?
Well, let's see. I feel, because I also did some online research, and I looked on one of your interviews about your goat, and if I read correctly or if the interview was accurate, you say that you do not administer a vaccination with your goat.
That's right.
And, yeah.
But let's get to the question. What did you learn about tetanus?
Oh, yes. Okay.
What is tetanus?
Tetanus is a bacteria that grows,
that's right.
that is in the soil. Yes.
That's right. It's in all soil. It doesn't matter where the nail was. As a matter of fact, you can get tetanus from putting your hand in the soil if you have like a hangnail.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't have to be a puncture wound.
Oh.
Tetanus is all around us all the time. Now, horse feces is a very good vector for tetanus.
Mm.
And when there were as many horses as there are cars, there was a lot more tetanus.
Ah.
Right? Because there was a lot more. And that's what people mean by dirty.
All right.
They mean with horse pucky on it. Now, what conditions does tetanus like for growing?
Ah, closed wounds.
Closed wound. So how do you keep tetanus from growing in a wound?
Oh, by letting it have air?
By keeping the wound open.
By keeping it open.
How do you keep a puncture wound open?
By not stitching it up. Or by not...
Not stitching up and by soaking it.
By soaking it. Ah.
So you have to keep it wet and open.
Oh, all right.
Just soak it in hot water. You can soak it in hot water with a handful of salt thrown in it.
Oh, yeah.
You can soak it in, my nurse friend swears by soaking with ivory dishwashing liquid. It's not just any dish soap. She actually brought me a bottle and she said, here, you get all kinds of stuff on your feet. Just try it out. And I had to say to her, you're right. She said, there's scent in there that draws stuff out of the skin.
Mm.
I said, all right. She said, listen to me. I'm a nurse. It's not just that I like this brand. I'm like, okay, all right.
All right.
So just a drop or two of that in a basin. Mm-hmm. If you're sitting in the evening talking to people, or if you're sitting in the evening whittling or knitting or working a jigsaw puzzle or a cross puzzle, soak it.
Yeah. All right, I definitely will do that. Thank you very much. And
meanwhile, if you're concerned, you could take any herb that would be antibacterial, like echinacea or yarrow or even calendula.
I was reading and about the antiseptic herbs. Would garlic and rosemary apply to that?
Yes.
Yes.
But garlic is more considered to be an antiseptic locally. In other words, where it can directly contact the bacteria.
Uh-huh. All right.
And rosemary has a lot of volatile oil in it. And so I'm always hesitant to use something like that in large quantity.
All right.
Mm-hmm. And certainly yarrow has a small amount of volatile oil. But it has a list of scientifically validated bacteria that it kills longer than your arm.
Wow.
So when I'm thinking bacterial infection, general, yarrow is something that comes more to my mind than garlic or rosemary.
Great. Yes. Yarrow. I remember hearing about yarrow in the nights of the talks, of the, you know, the phone talks, like this one, actually. Yes, it rings bells to me and all the beautiful properties of yarrow. And even, yarrow is great.
Yeah.
And then another thing that has been on my heart, my mother, she is very stricken now with, like, because she's been drinking, like, loads and loads of alcohol, of beer. And now she's in the hospital.
Oh, dear.
And now it's just been a very intense day because, you know, I step on a tack and then later my mother is administered into the hospital. And so she's in the ICU unit or the ICU at a local hospital here. And she is just, you know, stricken with just like, you know, she has the shakes and just some very intense shakes. And, you know, her eyes are yellow and her body is swollen. And, you know, I brought some of my nettle infusion into the hospital with me, and I was like, Mom, drink this, please. And she drank it, like, almost like her body, you know, because she normally wouldn't drink that, and she just drank it, like, so, like, and I was like, yes, your body needs this. And
oh, how beautiful.
Yeah,
oh.
And, you know, it was just, it really was. I was just like, oh, Mom, you know, like, and it just opened up this, like, compassion in my heart. And I just, you know, wanted to get, you know, some more just advice or just something to help her. And
what does it say to you that you see this yellow in her eyes?
To me, it reminds me of, like, almost like a wolf. That's how it reminds me. You know?
The liver absorbs keratins and utilizes them. And when the liver can't do that, those keratins are flushed out into the skin and in extreme cases into the white of the eye.
Oh.
And when we see that yellow in the eye, it's called jaundice. And that means that the liver is hardly functioning at all. Now, of course, we know that alcohol is really harsh on the liver, right?
Yes.
Alcohol breaks down into several things that are outright poisons to the liver. And so, fortunately, the liver is remarkably regenerative.
Ah, good to hear.
Yeah. The difficulty with the situation where your mom is now is that while the liver can regenerate, her other systems, we don't know how much damage they have suffered.
Mm-hmm.
So her cardiovascular system has taken a hit. And often, even if people wish to stop drinking, the lack of alcohol can cause a heart attack.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Sometimes breathing difficulties occur, and often the immune system is very disabled. And so the alcohol, acting almost like a pickling agent or preservative, when it is removed, then a flood of infections can come in.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm glad that she's in the intensive care, because she really needs people to be right there with her and take care of her.
Yeah.
As she's coming off of this. And the nettle infusion is a wonderful thing to offer her. And any part of dandelion in any way would be a marvelous thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your loving care for her.
Yes.
Is of inestimable value. And I feel my friend Patch Adams sitting here next to me and going, tell him to make her laugh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That, and, you know, when I went there, you know, she did laugh. And we had, you know, although she was shaking and all of that, you know, and going through whatever, you know, she was going through, we did share laughs. And it just was so heartwarming and heartbreaking to see her in that way. And, yeah, so, goodness, it's just, I'm grateful that she's still alive, that I'm still with her, that I can still, you know, it's like offer her this blessing that you have blessed me with and just be like, here, you know, this is what I can offer. So thank you very much.
Yes. Yes, that you can say, here, have some nettle infusion. What a wonderful thing to be able to offer and to see her innate physical organism go, give me that nettle now.
I know. I know. She was just like, and like drinking it so like thirstily and, you know, heartily. And I just opened up my heart just to have that. Although it said no food or drink allowed, I was like, this isn't food or drink. This is medicine.
You're right. It's neither. It's herbal infusion.
this is beyond any of Well, it's been such a blessing. And thank you for your being and for your wise ways and your heart. So it's so appreciated in my life.
Thank you, Parker.
Oh, and your comfrey is drawing, and I will be sending it to you soon. So, yes, it's happening. It's coming.
And so now you see why I do those things. It's not really to, like, make you do something. It's so that we have a continuing connection.
Exactly. And I, like, it hit me. I was like, oh, tricky. It was so cool.
I have your rainbow rag, too. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, I hope it is serving you well. I hope it is
so beautifully well, and I think of you every time I use it.
Oh, well, blessings. All right, I love you very much. And, I'll be talking and sending you love messages shortly.
Thank you, Parker. We value every message that we get from you. Green blessings.
Oh, blessings. Bye-bye.
Hey, Susan. So we have three people that are hoping to ask you questions, and it looks like we have about 35 minutes, so let's keep our answers down to the 10-minute range, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
The 732 area, the line is open for you to speak with Susan.
Yes, thank you. I've just finished listening to your 12-week series about the healthy heart, and have enjoyed it immensely and do want to listen to it again. But I have three questions.
Okay.
You mentioned, Susan, to alternate infusions, and I've been alternating them daily. I've been taking red clover one day and linden the next, and I've ordered now oat straw and nettle and a few others. Is that the way to alternate, or should it be a longer period of time before I alternate to another one?
No, that's a perfect way to alternate.
Okay, that's good. That's good. I have two medical problems. I have heaviness in my chest and poor circulation in my legs, and in doing research and listening to you speak, I've thought about taking ginkgo and hawthorn, or hawthorn. Is one better than the other, or would you suggest something else?
I'm a great lover of hawthorn.
Okay. Yeah.
Hawthorn is a wonderful herb. It is without side effect. And hawthorn is one of those herbs that does a lot but doesn't make a big fanfare about it. It doesn't, like, run in and save the day. It just works slowly and consistently to really bring about fabulous health.
Would you use that as a tincture? Tincture then, or as an infusion?
any way you like it.
Either way.
I personally make hawthorn berry tincture, and that's what I take, simply because it's easy for me.
Okay.
But hawthorn leaf and flower infusion, hawthorn berry infusion, those are all wonderful as well.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. I have another question.
Did you say that you are currently drinking nettle infusion?
No, not yet. I've ordered the nettle, though.
Okay, because I think the nettle infusion is one of the infusions that will give you a lot of what you're looking for. It will ease the heaviness in your legs.
Okay.
Nettle infusion really restores healthy flexibility to the veins. And what's that heaviness in the legs is heaviness. Women describe it as my legs feel heavy, and it is heavy. What's happening is that the blood is not being able to move up the veins
right.
fast as it was. And so there's literally more blood in your legs, and they literally are heavier. And nettle helps to restore the flexibility to those veins and draw that out of the legs, thus making your legs feel lighter.
So the infusion of nettle would be the way to go.
That's right.
Great, because that is what I ordered.
Perfect.
Okay, wonderful. Now, I've been diagnosed with aortic valve stiffening, stenosis. I don't know if that can
be... Nettle will also help that.
The nettle. Okay. Wonderful. I will get right to work on it.
Good. It said that nettle restores the cardiovascular system to the same flexibility that you had when you were a teenager.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful. Really encouraging. I needed to hear that.
Now, I also know that especially when your legs feel heavy, it can be hard to move a lot. But I do want to encourage you to set a walking goal and to do a walk every day. Even if it starts out as a short walk.
Now, I've been trying to do more walking because I notice I don't want to be sedentary. I'm getting on in the years, and I want to reverse all of this. Thank you very much, Susan.
Important. All right. Green blessings. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Sounds like a seashell pressed to my ear. Is there someone on the line who wants to ask a question? Oh, now the seashell in the ocean is gone.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, hi. I didn't see that I was called. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Marie, and I'm so pleased to speak with you. Thank you so much. I have all your books, and I'm drinking my nourishing herbal infusions in rotation. And I have a couple of questions. I'm 56, and my last menses was 11 years ago, just so you know a little bit about me. But I believe I have a real resistant case of bacterial vaginosis. And I have your book down there, and I'm following those great ideas. I'm doing garlic insert one night, a whole clove peeled, and then an acidophilus capsule the next night, and taking yarrow tincture three times a day, a dropper full. And it's a red streaky look in the inner labia, and I wonder, is it better to focus on a particular herbal infusion at this time, or is there I was thinking about oak bark sitz bath. Would that be useful?
Oak bark sitz bath is right what was on my mind. I think that's a great idea.
Okay.
And how much yogurt are you eating?
Oh, I'm eating at least a quart a week.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Great.
And I also made that yarrow infusion with vinegar finger bath So I'm trying to do that every time I visit their bathroom.
Good for you. Excellent self-care. That's wonderful. The only thing that I could think to add would be for you to ask this persistent infection, how are you trying to help me?
Oh, okay. I will, yeah.
Because my understanding is that when we understand how our bodies are trying to help us and protect us, then we actually have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
We don't ask that question, then we don't really have a choice. We're like saying, you just go ahead and do what you do, and then I'll like counter you and see you as misbehaving. So
right.
It's kind of like the Aikido of illness, right? Instead of countering it to say, can we work together? What is it that you want for me? Can I do that myself?
Mm. Right. I want to get the message.
Sometimes it's as simple as I'm here because I need for you to pay more attention to this area of your body.
Okay.
And sometimes the answer is more complex.
Hmm. Okay. I will do that.
All right.
And then with the five nourishing herbal infusions, is there one I might focus on more than others, or?
I see them as the basis for health, and so I just keep rotating through them. It's not like, gosh, maybe if I had a massive injury,
mm-hmm.
I would increase the amount of comfrey that I did. From, you know, once every fifth time to once every third time.
Mm-hmm.
But none of these infusions are specifically antibacterial.
Okay.
So none of them are going to be of any particular or direct use in what you're doing here.
Okay.
So again, they're providing the background for health.
Right. So as I'm going along and I'm listening to my body and providing nourishment and care, how long might I expect to go along with a daily oak bark sitz bath and all of these things? When would I look to change my focus or change something if it's not changing and the way it needs to? You know, am I asking in any kind of clear way? I don't know.
Well, yes, and again, go back to down there, and you will see that the remedies are arranged from step zero, do nothing, to step six, break and enter.
Okay.
And there are two reasons that I put out this paradigm. One, because I saw people going too quickly to drugs and surgery, and I wanted to make them aware of all the steps that they could engage in beforehand. And two, because I found people would say, well, I tried alternative medicine, but they hadn't really. All they had done was a whole bunch of different techniques in one of those steps.
Right. Okay.
So the nourishing herbal infusions and the oak bark sitz bath, in a way, are from the same step. So go and look at those steps again and see if you're doing something within each step. And you certainly don't have to include drugs or surgery within those steps, because those are not health promoting.
All right. Good. No. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
You are welcome. Green blessings.
You too. Good night.
Good night.
In the 614 area, the line's open for you to speak with Susan.
Hi. Can I be heard?
Yes, quite fine.
Hi. How are you?
Just wonderful. And you?
I'm okay. Thank you so much for taking the call. I almost feel embarrassed asking about this, but it's something that's causing a great deal of concern and upset for me. I'm 99.999% sure I've entered the menopausal, the start of that. My body's just going wacko 6 weeks until Sunday, and I'm losing my hair. And it's not only thinning all over, I mean, it's receding, but it's also falling out. And my gut instinct almost tells me that those aren't necessarily connected. I've had a lot of trauma in the last 7 years of my life. I just didn't know if you had any suggestions, because like I said, I'm almost embarrassed to ask it, but it's something that's really upsetting me. Any ideas?
Well, you shouldn't, there's no need for embarrassment at all. And it was one of the reasons why I revised Menopausal Years. My first was Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way. And I really felt there was this fire breathing down my backside that I just had to get it out and get it published before I got to menopause and lost my mind. And then after menopause, I was able to revise that book and add some themes that I had wanted to include but didn't get a chance to in the first iteration of it. So New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, does have a whole chapter devoted to hairy problems. And I love the quote from a woman who worked really as my right-hand woman in the publishing, my publishing business for decades. And when she got to menopause, she said, you know, I'm a cat woman. I'm used to seeing hair all over the house. I'm just not used to it being mine.
Yeah.
So, yes, menopause does cause your hair to fall out. It's true. And that's because you're making lots and lots of hormones during menopause. People think of menopause as somehow being hormone deficient, but it's the opposite. You're hormone replete during menopause. And this can cause changes in the color, the texture, and the amount of your hair. One of the primary things that's going on here is a lack of nourishment. You are not getting the minerals and the protein that you need to make new hair. Are you drinking nourishing herbal infusions?
Not yet. And by the way, I do have your book, but I apparently don't have the revised version. So
I have to, it has to say new on the cover. New menopause.
That's what happened. Okay. No,
believe me, the old one is not anywhere near as good as the new one. Get a copy of the new one. It's cheap.
I will do this.
Okay.
Start
taking nettle infusion and getting more infusions into your life. Cooked greens. Do you eat cooked greens on a regular basis?
No.
I would not want to let a day go by that I didn't eat at least a serving of cooked greens.
Okay.
Like the infusions, I think they're one of the mainstays for health. The grains that you eat, what kinds of grains are you eating right now?
I've gone completely gluten-free and about
big
the only...
Big mistake.
Really?
One of the biggest mistakes. You want to lose all your hair? That's a good way to do it.
Really? I didn't know. I just, it had... been affecting my moods improved so much when I got the gluten junk out of my life that I just...
I don't think so. What
really?
Usually happens when people say I improved when I went gluten-free was that they were eating some what we call bad carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
And they get these refined carbohydrates out of their diet under the guise of getting rid of gluten and say, I feel better. And it's nothing to do with the gluten. It has to do with the refined carbohydrates.
Okay.
You're telling me that before you got gluten out of your diet, you were eating exclusively 100% whole wheat bread?
Not 100%. Actually, I've ate very little bread. I was consuming mostly whole wheat pasta, organic whole wheat pasta.
And how much of that on a weekly basis?
I didn't eat it very much, to be honest. I was more into the brown basmati rice than the wheat. I was eating a lot of brown basmati, and I still am.
Yeah, I was going to say, because there's no gluten in that. So what? I'm not exactly clear how big a change this is then. First, you characterized it as getting all that gluten out of your diet, and now you're telling me it really you weren't eating very much whole wheat. You were eating some pasta, and not that often.
Yeah, there was probably some junk in there that shouldn't have been. So, I mean, if I really look at things, I'm sure there was.
That's what I'm saying. It's not the gluten.
Okay.
It's the junk.
Got it.
And you probably haven't gotten gluten out of your diet, and that's okay. Because gluten is hidden in a lot of things.
Yeah, I've done the best I can, but,
Don't. All that's going to happen is you're going to get nutritional deficiencies by going gluten-free. It is a big fad, and it makes about as much sense as radioactive underwear for fertility.
Whoa. I think I'll skip that then.
That was a fad in Russia.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Gluten-free
wow.
makes as much sense as radioactive underwear.
I did start using the einkorn wheat, and I have had no problems with that whatsoever. I mean, none.
That contains gluten. You see, it has nothing to do with gluten.
Nothing to do with gluten. Okay.
Nothing to do with gluten.
I'm barking up the wrong tree here. Okay.
Totally.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate
it. It is made of minerals, protein. What are your sources of protein in your diet?
Eggs, organic, you know, the free
range. Good, that sounds good.
Yeah, yogurt.
Huh?
It's not, unfortunately, I can't get a hold of raw milk in Ohio. It's illegal.
You can buy raw milk cheese at any supermarket?
Really?
Yes.
No, I mean, you cannot, it's against Ohio law to sell raw milk, so.
You can buy raw milk cheese in any supermarket.
Cheese? Really?
Correct.
Okay. What?
Ohio, in any state, you can buy raw milk cheese.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay.
Did not know that. Okay.
Fish?
I had no idea about that. Yeah, fish, definitely.
Chicken?
Not too much, no. Not too much on the poultry scale.
Red meat?
Yes.
Okay.
Beef, bison, that's pretty much it.
Good. Okay. So one of the things that I find, especially during menopause, is that a little more meat in the diet is healthy for women, especially women who are evidencing protein deficiency by falling hair.
Okay.
Now, the nourishing herbal infusions are also very rich in protein, so they're great resource for protein.
Okay. Okay, well, I will definitely look into that because this is just driving me insane.
I hear you.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, my hair's already turned and it's a beautiful silver and it's very long, but this is just really heartbreaking.
I hear you. I'm glad you called and asked. And let us know if these things are helpful for you.
Okay, thank you so much. I sure appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Green blessings.
Mm-hmm. Susan, I have two more people on the line that would like to ask questions, so let's try to
divide
that between
the next. Okay, well,
within
a 10-minute limit, we should be able to do it.
Yeah, so we have the person in the 330 area code. Are you there?
Hi there.
Hi. Hi, green blessings.
Hi, Susan, green blessings. How are you today?
Just fine, and you?
Good, I'm very well. My name's Lexi. I live in Wyoming. And a woman who I just started working for, I was admiring her garden the other day, and I saw this beautiful comfrey plant staring back at me. And we got to talking, and she offered any time that I wanted any cuttings of any of her plants, that she'd be happy to pass those on to me. And I was so overwhelmed and just, you know, very thankful for that. I was just curious, when is the best time to get a comfrey cutting? Would it be in the fall, or and how would I go about doing that?
You don't want a cutting. You want a piece of the root.
Okay.
And you can dig a piece of comfrey root anytime you can dig the soil. And you can plant it anywhere and it will grow.
Wonderful, wonderful. My living situation is a little unsure for the next couple of months. Do you think that I can start this in a pot and then eventually once I find my piece of land, let it grow free in there? Will it be happy in a pot?
No.
Okay.
No,
okay.
It will be miserably unhappy in a pot.
All right. Well, then I think now is just not the time then.
Probably not.
All right. Well, I have probably 1.5 million questions that I could ask you, but that was my one for today. Thank you
right.
so much
we'll
for doing this
show. We'll call back again sometime.
I will.
To
thank you, Susan.
To you again.
I look forward to it as well. Have a great one.
Green blessings.
Green blessings.
Hello?
Hello.
Am I on the line?
You are on the line. What's your question?
Hi, I'm Parisa. I'm very excited to talk to you. It's my first time calling. I have to say I've been dreaming of you a lot recently. I don't remember very specifics, but I have. And your work has helped me enormously in my life. So I wanted to thank you first. So my question is basically, I've been having a lot of issues recently, including my period is getting, I used to be very regular every 28 days. By the way, I'm 37 years old.
Okay.
And so my period, you know, from 28 days now, it's like 35 or more. I've been having a lot of mood issues, a lot of irritability, anger, just tiredness, just feeling pretty miserable. And also, I've been gaining weight, even though I'm trying to eat healthy. And so also this lower back pain and side pain that I've had chronically after I had my baby 2.5 years ago. It's actually improved a lot since I started your herbal infusion. The pain has almost completely gone away. But,
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Did you hear me?
I'm very glad to hear that.
Oh, okay. Great. So, yeah, my question is basically, I'm not sure. I went to the OBGYN with all these symptoms, and they pretty much didn't say anything. They didn't do any hormonal testing or anything. But I'm kind of, it's really bothering me, all these symptoms that I have, especially the mood. And I've been using motherwort since I had my child, and it's been very helpful. I think that's, you know, using motherwort, I was prescribed Zoloft. And I didn't want to take it, so I tried motherwort, and so far, you know, I've been able to come this far. But everything is getting worse. And so I don't know basically if there is any suggestion or anything from you would be helpful.
I'm a little unclear about what you mean when you say everything is getting worse.
Well, the mood, you know, the irritation and the mood issues, the weight gain. I keep gaining weight, and even, you know, I try to be the past few months I've been more active, I've been more sort of looking into what I'm eating and all of that, but I keep gaining weight, and it's very frustrating, and it's affecting me so much.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, unfortunately, some of what you're saying leads me to believe that there may be a thyroid issue going on.
Oh, actually, I do. Sorry, I forgot to mention. I do have hypothyroidism, and I'm on medication for it. So I am taking, the last test I took, is it TSH or THS, whatever it was.
Uh-huh.
It was actually pretty low. It was 0.2 or something. So the medication seems to be... the test shows that it should be okay.
All right. Because that kind of unexplained weight gain is quite classically some thyroid problem.
Uh-huh.
You said you're 37?
Yes.
And your children are how old now?
I have one, and she's 2.5. I'm still breastfeeding her.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Could be part of, because somebody told me some women won't lose weight until they stop breastfeeding.
That can be true. That certainly can be true.
Yeah. But the problem is, you know, not only I'm not losing weight, I'm actually gaining. It's like, you know, pretty, like, kind of rapidly recently for the past month or so. And I've had a lot, you know, despite back, lower back pain I've had has been very, very intense. And again, taking the herbal infusion, it's very mellow. It comes out sometimes, but not as bad. So I don't know if there could be something going on hormonally with me, or like I'm not sure. And I was diagnosed with PCOS years ago in my 20s.
Uh huh.
So at that time I gained a bunch of weight, and you know, I had a lot of issues, and then I worked and I lost it, and I was in a healthy place for a long time, and now I'm here again, and I'm wondering if it's just hormonal or something else. I just don't, and I'm tired all the time. I just don't feel good. I'm pretty.
I hear you. I really, really hear you. So you have had your thyroid medication checked within the past 3 months?
Yes.
Okay, because I'm tired all the time, the weight gain, all of this, again, you know, leads me to say something is going on with your thyroid. Because no matter what's going on with your hormones, it usually doesn't make you tired.
Oh, okay.
Now, your child is more active at 2, and many parents find that they hit a real tired wall, that they've been, you know, going on kind of the thrill of infancy. And suddenly at 2, like, it's almost as though you wake up and you go, oh, my goodness, this child is a separate being from me. And I haven't had any sleep at all in 2 years, and they're really demanding now, and I'm just exhausted.
Oh, yeah.
So that can be part of what's going on with you as well. So long as you're eating a diet that has little raw food in it, so long as you're eating a broad diet that includes dairy products, eggs, and some meat, not as mainstay, but as part of the diet, so long as you're drinking nourishing herbal infusions, then I'm not worried about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly there are other things that could be going on, and if you feel that there's some larger disease state going on here, like leukemia,
uh-huh,
or lupus,
uh-huh,
then pursue that with the medical profession. I do real well with health, but I don't do so well with disease. It's a separate study.
Right. Yeah, you know, that's part of it. I've been feeling, and I don't know if it's because I am suffering from anxiety. And it's pretty confusing because I do think about, like, I feel like something is wrong in my, like, and I can't find it. And it's hard to know if it's because of my anxiety or there is something going on. You know, it's just like I've had bowel movement issues, like so many times going to the bathroom and kind of like hemorrhoid and just irritation down there a lot too. And just all these little things here and there that just, it's hard to know what's going on.
Do you have a meditation practice? Do you have a time? I know it's hard with a young child, but just a time, even if it's only once a week, where you sit down with yourself and you say, checking in with you, body. What do you need to tell me? What do I need to pay attention to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't, and I know I do need to do that. I used to be very much, you know, in tune with my body, doing practices like that, but since having my child, I haven't been doing much.
I understand. I truly do. Having a child is very consuming. They need you, and one's maternal instinct says to put your needs on the back burner and take care of the needs of your child. But again, you are at that age when you suddenly look and say, hey, this is a separate being from me. And in order for me to really take care of this being, I need to take care of myself.
Yeah. It's so interesting you're saying that. Today I was so burned out that I just called in my sister and my mom, and I left my baby with her, with my mom, and I, you know, with my sister, we came to this just hotel, motel to just, you know, I just needed to get away and be on my own, you know. So after a long time, I'm actually right now, I'm there. I'm in a motel talking to you.
Yes, yes, I hear you. Yeah, absolutely. It's not unreasonable. It's a huge responsibility. It's, you know, it's something that the mother feels very acutely, and we've shown scientifically that when a baby cries, that the mother's cortisol level goes up, not the other people around. And the mother is going to be the one who's going to respond and respond the fastest because she's the one who's most influenced by that. So a good move to ask your mom and your sister to give you a hand.
Oh, they are. Without them, I don't know what I would have done so far.
It takes the whole family to raise a child.
Exactly. Like I cannot even imagine how I would have done it without them. They're always, you know, when we live close by, and whenever I need help, they're there to help me. But again, like, you know, right now, to be honest, so you think the irritation, like the sudden just irritability and anger coming up, it's probably just a stage of life I'm in. It's not, it couldn't be something.
I don't know. I personally don't think that you have some big serious disease. I could be wrong.
Sure.
But that's not what it's feeling like to me.
Sure. Okay. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Green blessings.
Green blessings.
Hey there.
Hey.
All right.
So do we have one more caller we need to fit in, or
it looks like we do. So let's open the line here for the 541 area code.
That's Karen Kane.
Oh, yay!
Kane, the author of A Unique Life Fully Lived, a personal journey of love, hope, and courage. In this book, Karen shares how she bridged the gap from special needs to creating mainstream experiences in all arenas of life for her daughter, Lauren. She helped Lauren get best friends, slumber parties, concerts, camping, beauty pageants, Girl Scouts, school dances, musicals, and travel. In A Unique Life Fully Lived, we learn about the unique and extraordinary life experiences that Karen has created for Lauren and the strong bond and the soul connection between mother and daughter that continues to this day. Welcome to the show, Karen Kane.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so glad that we could talk to you and learn more about all of these things. So when you say that your strong bond continues to this day, how old is your daughter today?
Well, actually, my daughter passed away 5 years ago this December. So we keep a very strong spiritual connection. And I was just listening to you talking to your listener, and it's so important that mothers of every type of child, a unique child, a neurotypical child, they take that time for themselves to care for themselves. And I'm always checking in with my body. And when I check in with my body and try to figure out what's going on, I'm always talking to Lauren because she was just extremely intuitive when she was here. But and so I learned for 15 years that she lived how to communicate telepathically with her. And so I just work that muscle as much as I can, and I try to listen.
Was she unable to speak?
She was unable to speak. My daughter Lauren was vaccine injured in 1994, and she had her one and only DPT vaccine, and it gave her severe brain damage. She had what was considered to be a hot lot. There were 30 kids who had seizures or worse with that lot and 10 surrounding deaths. And so 2 hours after the vaccination, she had a five-minute tonic-clonic seizure. And then 2 hours after that, she had another one. And on that day, my entire life changed. For 15 years, she had uncontrolled seizures. And when the brain doesn't work, the body doesn't work. So she never spoke with words, but, of course, she communicated with her expressions. And she was very lucky because she was very intuitive, and she started talking to people in their dreams. And she communicated to many people via dream state. And she was cortically blind. She was in a wheelchair. She didn't have a proper use of her arms or legs. and she was fed through a feeding tube. She ended up having a trach because she couldn't breathe out of her nose and her mouth. So she was in a body that was a complete train wreck. And in the beginning, of course, I was devastated, and I wanted to fix her. And I learned through her just the power of who she was and how strong she was, even though her body was so broken. Her spirit and her soul were very powerful. And I just started, in the beginning, of course, we did modern medicine, and I learned quickly that the only thing that modern medicine could do was prescribe, you know, up on this, down on that. She was on at one time 7 anti-seizure medications and still having uncontrolled seizures. We put her in a coma twice to stop the seizures. And I, you know, was really thrown out of the medical community. Most of my friends, I didn't fit in really anywhere. And I started searching and digging deep in myself spiritually and, of course, alternatively, and did all kinds of herbs and drops and tinctures and all kinds of things that I think really helped keep her strong and keep her going for 15 years.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Even to the point of entering her into a beauty pageant.
Yes, and that wasn't exactly my idea. When she was in middle school, that was one of the best parts of her life. That's where she ended up getting a canine companion, and she ended up meeting friendships. And she, of course, loved fashion. She was a typical girl, loved to shop, loved the Disney Channel at the time, loved chocolate. And it was really expensive to keep her. I wanted her to always be age-appropriate, and I knew that people were staring at her anyway, so I always did my best to have her look as cute as possible. And I put her in for all of these. I wrote to Abercrombie, and I wrote to Hollister and just said, you know, she should be a model trying to get free clothes. And we ended up being invited somewhere, and that ended up to being a beauty pageant. And Lauren wanted to be in it. It was one of the hardest things I ever did with her. But I was so proud once it was done. I mean, she was, and we had to change her 4 times in one day. We did pictures. She got on stage. And it was an entire thing. And I just was very proud. All the young girls were mainstream, but they all just, you know, were really super sweet to her. And they came up to her and they were jealous because I had her wheelchair decorated. So they were kind of, you know, just envying of she had a really pretty dress on and just kind of putting ourselves out there, breaking the barriers, and allowing Lauren to do what she wanted to do, not pushing her, you know, and just allowing her personality to come out. And that was one of the events that we did, and I'm glad we did it.
How beneficent that you were able to set aside what you wanted and to pay attention to what your daughter wanted.
Well, I think as parents, especially when you have a child who's unique and, you know, with complex things, you know, we all have a dream of how, I certainly had a dream of how I thought my life would be. And when Lauren came in and just changed the playing field, I had to let go of all of those dreams. And then I really had to push and persevere the things that we could do together and the things that we could enjoy. You know, we swam with the dolphins in a special program, but that was one of the funnest things we ever did. And we did things differently, but it didn't mean that we couldn't do, you know, almost everything. And I learned intuitively with Lauren that she was very, very powerful. And when we focused together on things that we both wanted, we became so powerful. I mean, I just believe that just because she couldn't talk and walk, she still had the same desires of other kids. You know, she still was embarrassed of me and scowled at me when she was a teenager. You know, she just did things differently. And, you know, when we could communicate, we would set goals in January and we'd write them down. We'd go to the beach and I would meditate and pray and try to really hear what she was saying. And we would just write down the goals that we wanted to, you know, make for the year and what we wanted to accomplish. And I learned really quickly when she wanted what I wanted, we could get a lot more done.
And did that mean you're changing what you wanted?
Well, I think it's really important as parents and for me, I needed to understand that she had a soul agreement and I had a soul agreement, and we had an agreement together. So I think she came in here to do certain things, and I, you know, had things that I wanted to do, but I had to respect where she was at. And so, you know, when someone is not able-bodied and they can't walk and they can't talk, of course I could control everything, and I am, you know, definitely a control freak. But when I would respect her and really try to get in touch with her, and, you know, I think we all know our children is, you know, we all have this intuition, and the more we listen to it, I think the stronger it gets, and I think the better we hear. And with Lauren, I was always relying on my intuition and trying to talk with her and to pull her out of her body. So, you know, I'm not saying that I was, well, I'm for sure not saying that I was a perfect parent. I was not a perfect parent. But I think
none of us are perfect. It's okay. We can all give up on being perfect.
Yeah. You know, but once I really listened to her and got in connection that, you know, she had things that she wanted to do. And when I, you know, put effort on her soul agreement and then put effort on my soul agreement, I think we became such a better team. And when I quit pitying her in the beginning, of course, I wanted to fix her. I did not want to be a parent of a child with a disability. And when I realized that she was just perfect the way she was and sat by her side to make her comfortable and allow her to be exactly what she was going to be and quit feeling sorry for her, I became such a better partner to her. And, you know, that's really why I wrote this book, because I think, you know, she came in here and lived in a body that was broken for 15 years and held her head up high and did all kinds of things. And, you know, I obviously we're soulmates, and now that she's gone, I feel like it's my obligation to share our story to help, you know, all kinds of adversity. You know, we parents of mainstream kids and unique children, we all have adversity and we all get beat up. And, you know, again, it's like we have to take care of our spirits so we can be, you know, there for our family and our children. And I think that's the number one thing, that Lauren was just energy. And so the body is physical, and, of course, you know, it's great that we could eat chocolate and hug and be together, but I think the soul is forever. And so when I'm checking in with my body and I'm trying to really keep myself well, I'm seeing myself as an energetic being and knowing that she's just energy close by. That, for me, is really comforting.
Very beautifully said. Was it difficult for you to write this book?
Well, I wrote in the beginning because I really was so broken and so wounded and so lost. And at the time, it was before the Internet. I didn't know anybody that was going through what I was going through. I went through vaccine court, and that was a nightmare. And, you know, if anybody's looking at what's happening with the CDC and the lies that are being told about vaccines, I was alone, and they made sure I was, you know, stayed alone. And so I started writing really therapeutically. At one point, right at the end of the editing, I told the editor, I'm like, let's just go through and pull all the F words out. And they're not all pulled out, but, you know, I was not a sainted parent, and I went in kicking and screaming, and I fought for a long time until I realized that the resistance was really just inhibiting everything that she was doing, and it was inhibiting me and my healing. And when I kind of let go and got in the flow of things and just really tried to be in the moment and quit fixing her, I just became such a better, happier person. And I think, I'm sure she enjoyed me more, because, you know, all of us parents, we want the best for our children. And, you know, especially with autism and recovery and all that we do, it's like, you know, we beat ourselves ragged. And then there's nothing left at the end of the day for our children. And so when she was alive, I really just tried to make her as comfortable as possible and have as much fun as possible. And I was told that she would never live very long, so I never thought, you know, that it would be forever. I just wanted to make as, you know, I wanted to, one, learn the lessons that she came here to teach, and two, to have as much fun as possible.
Karen, you are just saying such beautiful things, and it's really striking something in me, and I really want to thank you very much for it. Several years ago, a woman got in touch with me, booked an appointment with me, and began to tell me about her 8-year-old daughter, who very different problems, very different cause, but basically the same thing. She was trying to fix her, and she said, you know, no doctor could find anything wrong with her, but the child couldn't toilet herself, couldn't dress herself, couldn't eat, couldn't speak, right? Wasn't autistic, right? And she said, what can I do? And I said to her, do you love your child enough to accept her?
It's a hard thing to do.
And she said to me, what do you mean? I said, do you love your child enough to stop trying to turn her into your idea of a child and let her be who she is? Are you telling me I should just give up on her? I said, no, I'm telling you to accept her. She hung up on me.
I think it's really hard, and I fully understand. Of course, I understand denial. That was my first very favorite place to be. But that's why I do what I do. I travel around the U.S., and I hear not that story, but very similar. One woman I spoke to, I don't even know what state it was, and she said, you know, my daughter's probably the happiest person on this earth, but she'll never have a debutante ball. She'll never do this and never do this. And I just was like, let's go back to your first sentence.
Right.
Yeah, we're all souls and we're all here. And, I mean, I don't want our kids to be unwell. I don't want that. But I
no.
do believe that my child is here to teach me. And I always believed, especially in the beginning, that if I learned the lesson quicker, then she wouldn't have to suffer. I felt that, you know, I was in Earth school and I had to really get on board with what was going on with her. And, you know, now that I have the time, now that she's crossed over, my life is completely committed to, you know, stopping vaccine injury and to talking to parents with children who are unique. I mean, that's probably the hardest thing as a parent, to find that balance of accepting and doing everything you can to make them comfortable or to keep them well. That
yes.
that is certainly tricky.
It is indeed, and it wasn't something that I just casually offered to her. I mean, the woman had been trying to change her child for 8 years.
It's
unsuccessful.
It's a long time.
It's time to say, hey, maybe it's not going to happen, is all I was saying. And I also, of course, from my Zen background, absolutely agree with you that the only thing that hurts is resistance. And accepting something doesn't mean we just lay down and let the truck roll over us. You accepted your daughter as she was, and then you had a lot of free energy to get her into Girl Scouts, get her to musicals, get her to go camping, swim with the dolphins. You had a lot of resources available to you once you stopped trying to make something that could never happen happen.
And it wasn't that I wasn't open to her healing, but I really believed that she had the power to heal herself. And I would talk to channelers with her, because I'm still her parent and I still have my agenda, so I would often get a third-party channeler to communicate so I could get a clarity, because, I mean, I'm certainly biased. I want her to like my color. I mean, there were so many instances in her life that I wanted her to pick the way I wanted things, but you know, she did teach me that she was her own personality, and she had a huge personality, and she was here to do huge things. And, you know, the fact that almost 5 years later after her death we're still talking about this, it was just such an honor to be part of that journey. And I think she's the most brave and courageous person I've ever met. So, I would have loved to have a typical parent experience, but I just believe that wasn't meant for me. And Lauren said at one point, she just said, Mom, life is but a coffee break, you know, so it's always that choice.
I thought that's beautiful, a coffee break.
Yeah, she was never attached to her physical body. She was just not, I mean, she was, you know, she liked to look good. She liked her makeup and she liked all of that stuff, but she was just like, you know, it's just a body. When she was ready to go, when she was ready to cross over, she told me almost a year before that she was done, because I always gave her the same promise. If you want to stay, I'll take care of you. And if you're ready to go, I promise you I'll make you comfortable. I wanted her death to be as graceful as her life was. And so she told me in January, and she didn't die till almost the end of December. And, you know, that was a really tumultuous year of me just, you know, trying to figure it out. All along the way, I was learning. And, you know, at the end of stages, I was still learning. And so, you know, I made lots of mistakes, but I always try to get back on track to the goal, and that was to let her die with dignity and grace. And one of the fun things she did, she wanted to go to the rock store, the spiritual store that we shopped at, and she picked out like $300 in geodes, and she picked out all of these crystals and rocks, and we just put them in, we cleansed them, of course, and energized them in the full moon, and then we put them in bed with her for the last 3 months of her life. And I'll never forget, we just like, we're always running these rocks around, you know, there's this big thing of rocks, and she wanted to energize them and give them to her loved ones. I mean,
oh,
she just
how
was
beautiful.
So cool.
That's a whole new take on it, isn't it? So let's see. She went. Is it true that she went to the prom?
She went to a homecoming dance, and it was very interesting. Her first year as a in high school, and of course I never thought she would make it to high school. She was supposed to die, you know, by the age of 3, but she was in high school, and she ended up having these seniors who invited her to homecoming, and I was doing this for a few years, about 12, 13, she started having a caregiver who was just a gorgeous young woman. She was a firefighter, and she was just a pistol, and she would take Lauren to the school dances and do all, you know, the young activities so Lauren wouldn't have to be embarrassed by being with her mother.
Yeah,
it's so serious. And these girls invited her to do the homecoming dance with them, and Arielle was one of them. And I called her, and the invitation was to Lauren and Carissa. So I called her, and she's like, "Well, parents aren't invited." I was like, "Okay." And I was so happy that we were having, you know, mainstream events, but in a very strange way. So Lauren went to the homecoming and took pictures and had a blast. And, you know, they all went together and got their hair done. And it just was such a typical girl thing. And all of Lauren's friends, especially her best friend Sarah, I mean, they all didn't look at Lauren and see a nonverbal wheelchair-bound young lady. They saw a little bratty teenager who had a lot of spunk and who liked boys and who liked to flirt. And they completely accepted her for exactly who she was. And it was just a great thing. And, you know, it's a big part of the best part of my life, and it's a big part of why I wrote the book. And I'm going to be speaking in Georgia at the end of September and just talking about friendships and what we did together to just, you know, celebrate life and have her enjoy just some of the very basic needs of every person. We all want friends. We all want to be accepted. And, you know, nonverbal, you know, little girls who are in wheelchairs, they want the same thing.
And she did have a best friend named Susie, yes?
Sarah Rivera. She had a bunch of friends. We had a lot of sleepovers, and typically there were 5 people that slept over at once, and that was, for me, fun and exhausting. But her mainstream best friend, Sarah Rivera, no doubt. And Sarah is, we're still in contact. She just joined the Air Force, and, you know, she just loved Lauren, and she saw past any of Lauren's uniqueness, and just, they were best friends. They shared secrets, and we went to Disneyland together, we went to camp together and movies and hung out and had sleepovers, and she just didn't see her as someone who was in a wheelchair. One time she was dating a boy, and she actually tattooed Lauren's name on her foot with a dolphin, and she said to me, she goes, "Oh, I forgot to tell the guy that Lauren was disabled." Because it wasn't what they saw. I mean, in the beginning, of course, they could see, and, you know, they had all these questions about how'd she do this, why'd she do this, what's going on. And once they figured out that she did things differently, they didn't care. They just saw her heart and her personality. And, you know, I've had lots of conversations. One of the best things that I ever heard from Sarah recently, having sushi, she told me, she said, "I think that when Lauren was, you know, when we were hanging out," she goes, "I never realized how medically compromised Lauren was." And I just think that was one of the best compliments I could ever have, by just making our house fun and accessible and beautiful and having a great environment and not, you know, really putting the pressure of them of all her uniqueness. I mean, they just saw her as, you know, another little girl. And when they would come in and say, "Lauren's blue again," you know, they just didn't think about what was really going on. And, you know, they were just fun, and they used to hide Lauren from me. We'd go out in the community, and I'd look around, and they'd like hide her, well, you know, they'd just take her and hide her from me. And just,
oh my goodness. So it sounds like Lauren went to public school, is that true?
She was in the very severely disabled class on a public campus. So there was, it's like McDonald's and Taco Bell, you know, just the disabled class with all of the mainstream class. And I think that was great. And one of the things that when she went to that school originally, I wanted to make sure she was in a mainstream class. So she started with art, and then she went to horticulture, and that's really where she met all her friends. And then she had ASB. And then I think she had a reading class after that in high school. It was a lot of work, and I think that, you know, with Lauren, every day she was alive, she was another day behind. So I had to really learn as a parent how to navigate through really focusing on the things that we wanted to bring in our lives and not focusing on the things that she didn't do, and setting goals on the things that we could make happen, and then just making sure we had the support team that wanted the same things we did, you know. And when she ended up having friends, that was one of the huge goals that, you know, I worked really hard at. So it didn't just happen. I didn't just sit back and say, yeah, we'd like friends. But I put myself out there. I put Lauren out there. And sometimes we came home crying, or at least I did. Lauren always had her head high. But we put a lot of work into it, and we prayed about it, and we put it on our vision board, and we just made it happen. And I think when we're open and we ask the universe always answers us.
I absolutely agree with you. The universe is very interactive and is happy to answer us, perhaps not in the time frame we had in mind and perhaps not exactly the way that we imagined it, but the universe will answer.
Absolutely. So you got to be careful what you ask for. That's why I'm here right now.
Can you tell me a little bit about camping? Camping seems a little daunting for most people, but to go camping with someone who's in a wheelchair. I have a friend who's in a wheelchair, and I invited her to go someplace with me, and she said, you understand you're going to have to rent a motel for me.
Well,
so what was it like camping with Lauren?
I think that I was, back in the day, I went to a Renaissance fair and we camped, and we tent camped, and I hadn't thought about it, and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is so much fun, and it's cheap. So I was in love with Big Sur, and we used to always go in hotels, and I just bought a tent, bought everything we needed, and I went locally and tried it first by myself with her, and yes, it is a lot of work. And there were things I could do to make it easier. It was always easier when I was camping with someone else. I mean, I literally at one point had Lauren sitting out at Big Sur out of the bathroom while I'm in the bathroom showering and her service dog and her just sitting out on the curb. I'm like, I'm going to be back. I'm sure no one's going to take you. Most campers are pretty great people, and I think one of the things that I did, I had electricity in my van, which was really helpful because she not only had a wheelchair, she had breathing treatments she needed. She had a vest treatment that she needed, which took electricity, and so there was a lot of things. And we, at the end of time, sometimes we just would sleep in the van, which was lovely, but we tent camped, and one time after, putting up the tent, getting the campsite ready, doing all this, I remember sitting in the camp chair, and I look at her in the campfire, and we were just by ourselves, and she just smiled, this big, huge smile, and I thought, okay, that's the moment. That's why we do this. And,
that's
you
right.
Know, not, yeah. Just,
so even though she couldn't speak, she did interact with you.
Oh, absolutely. She scowled at me. She would do thumbs up. She would blink for yes. In the beginning when she, the doctors, of course, said go home, prepare for the worst, and, you've got a bad egg. I loved we love our children, and I was really lucky to have great therapists. The one therapist had a brother, sister, and a mother who was deaf and blind. So she really was able to teach me how to reach in and kind of pull Lauren out of her body. And I think keeping things age appropriate, and then the bribing, I knew she was in there, and so I just started bribing her. And I think the first thing I bribed her with was food. And, she didn't like anything green, so I would take green beans and then I would take chocolate, and I just told her, if you blink, you can have the chocolate, otherwise you're going to eat the green beans. And, she learned that. I think by empowering our children, especially when they're unique, it's very helpful. And for Lauren, that really worked. I would take her into the shop, especially Build-A-Bear, and I would show her everything, and I said, if you want something, you have to blink. And then we would take it and dress it, and we would just go through the whole thing. So I was constantly communicating and encouraging her to respond. And I knew that she had the ability to be intuitive and talk to people energetically or, intuitive. But I also know that there are a ton of people who aren't intuitive. So if I wanted to teach her that if you blink and communicate, you are going to better able to, connect with people and get friends and all of that. And I just had to really talk to her, especially when she started having friends. She was sleeping in school in the beginning, and I know she was really nervous. And I just told her, I said, if you want to have friends, you got to stay awake and you have to participate. And she'd kind of look at me. I'm sure she was overwhelmed because people were starting to come up to her and want to hang out with her. And that was, as new to her as it was to the other people. So we all had to be open and grow. And she was definitely expressive. And then if there was a time that you really didn't understand, she literally would just talk to you in a dream. And she does that and did that many, many times. And she talked a lot with her nurse who went to school with her for 4 years, and that was a great relationship that built along the way, and I talk about that in the book. And Debbie came into our lives, and she really wanted to connect with Lauren, but I let Debbie meet her, and we talked, and I said, you need to make Lauren responsible for her choices. You know, don't let her get away with things. And she came home 6 months later from school one day, and she said to me, she said, you know Lauren answers questions before I ask them. And I said, yeah, I know, but if I told you that, you thought I was crazy. So it was like people, you know, when they were around her, they would learn. You know, anyone who would give Lauren the time of day would see something and have a connection. I mean, if they, you know, for Debbie, she actually prayed a lot just to be able to communicate with Lauren, and her and Lauren had this entire way they communicated that was very different than what I did. But I, you know, like we all are, we all have these relationships. I think each of us have different relationships, and Lauren had different relationships with different people.
If someone listening would like to get a hold of this book, how can they do that?
They can go to KarenKane.com, KarenKane.com, or Lauren's World, LORRINS, world.com, and I'll be in Georgia at a symposium at the end of September, and then I'll be at the San Jose Abilities Expo at the end of November. And I'm on Facebook, and there's a Facebook page, A Unique Life Fully Lived, and I love to connect with people. I love to talk to parents, and thank you so much for this opportunity to share. It's definitely one of my favorite things to do.
Absolutely. So it's Lauren, L-O-R-R-I-N, Lauren's World, is it plural?
Yes, Lauren's World.
Lauren's, L-O-R-R-I-N-S, Lauren'sWorld.com. Or your name, K-A-R-E-N, Karen Kane, K-A-I-N, KarenKane.com. And then you're also on Facebook. And
absolutely.
Also on Facebook is A Unique Life Fully Lived, the book that you wrote about your experiences as the parent of a child with severe disabilities. And a child who was able mostly to communicate with you psychically rather than directly. What an amazing, amazing story. I know that you travel around the country and, in fact, around the world, bringing this news to other parents and reaching out. And this is what I call story medicine, Karen. I talk about how stories are so important to each one of us and how the stories that we hear from others can help us envision new ways of living and new ways of being. And I want to really applaud you and honor you as someone who is the carrier of a powerful story medicine that says we can have children who do not satisfy our vision of the child we wanted to have, and we can somehow find it within our hearts to love those children as they are, and at the same time to push and to work with them and to be as demanding from those children as we are from all of the other children that we have contact with. This is a rare and unique story that you are sharing with us and that you are sharing with the world. And I know that part of why you're doing this is because there was nobody there to share their story with you.
I wanted to give back.
When this happened
exactly.
to you. And so thank you for being that voice for other women and other parents.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to share my story on your show. I really appreciate it, and I love what you do. Thank you.
You are welcome. And we've come to the last minute of the show, and I want to know if there's something that you want to leave the listeners thinking about, something you want to leave in their hearts.
Well, I think the best thing that we can all do is take care of ourselves so we can take care of our children and share our messages, you know, and please, you know, if there's anything I could say right now, especially after this week, is please go to my website and look at what's happening with the CDC and the cover-up of vaccinations and, you know, let's share these stories and get our kids back to being healthy. I think that's my biggest thing right now is trying to keep our kids healthy and stop putting all these toxins in and get the truth out there.
Thank you, Karen Kane, for helping me, Susan Weed, to reweave the healing cloak of the ancients. We really appreciate your participation here at Women's Radio as well as at my blog talk show. And thank you, listeners, for also helping us to reweave the healing cloak of the ancients. Green blessings, everyone. I won't be with you next week, but September 9th, I'll be right back. Good night, Justine.
Good night, Susan.
Thanks.
Good
Thank
night,
you.
Karen.
Good night, Karen. Bye.